Popular travel writer Rick Steves is out with a new book that challenges travelers to journey more thoughtfully. Steves says there's more to travel than good value hotels, great art, and tasty cuisine. Americans who travel as a political act can have the time of their lives and come home smarter with a better understanding of today's world. Rick Steves' latest book is Travel as a Political Act. He'll be in Kansas City on March 11th at Unity Temple on the Plaza. That's all part of his 20 cities in 20 days road trip across the country. And Rick, welcome. Nice to have you here.
It's nice to be with you. Thanks for calling.
Well, why the road trip?
Well, you know, for the last 30 years, I've spent 4 months a year in Europe living out of a suitcase, and I've learned a lot about Europe, and I come home and teach about Europe all the time. And people keep saying, why don't you see your own country? And
they've got a point, right?
It's a good idea, yeah. And I've, you know, over the last years, I've been had the occasion to give talks in smaller towns around the country, and I just love the pride and the culture and the diversity and the I like being steep on the learning curve. So I thought, you know, every March for the last 20 years, I've dedicated, a week or 10 days for pledge work. I go to different big stations to do help out on pledge season,
yeah.
TV and radio. And I thought, a lot of smaller stations, I never get to see them. They never get to see me. And I thought, this March, I'm going to let Chicago and Los Angeles and Boston do without me. And I'm going to draw a line from Seattle to Florida and break it up with 20 stops and give it 20 days and see our own country and help a lot of smaller stations and give talks in different libraries and so on. So I'm really excited about both bringing my ideas about travel and also learning about our own country starting this Saturday. I'm leaving Seattle.
How much can you learn about the good old USA in 20 days, Rick?
Well, I don't know, but I'm going to learn more about it by taking this trip than staying home, that's for sure.
That's a lot of driving.
It's going to be 5 hours a day of driving, and it's going to be probably 6 hours a day of giving talks and meet and greets and interviews and stations and all that kind of stuff. But just being out and about, just road stops. I've asked my hosts in most of the towns where I am to give me a little tour mm-hmm. in the afternoon after I check into the hotel. And I've done that in. I was just in Fort Smith, I think it's called, in Arkansas.
Sure. Place.
I didn't even know it existed. When you live in Seattle, Fort Smith never comes up in the conversation. But, they had the original hanging judge there, and they had the bridge that faced west, and that's the bridge people went over when they opened it up to all the homesteaders, I guess,
Yeah.
And I had heard vaguely about that and remembered it from my schoolboy days, But there I was, and that was really part of who they were. And I think later on they took me to the military base where Elvis Presley got his haircut before going off into the army. And, I never thought that would be a historic sight, but there's the chair Elvis sat in when he got his haircut to go into the army. And I just thought, I do that all the time in Europe, and I pick up all these quirky little insights in Europe, and I'm just going to go, I'm going to have a wonderful time for the next 20 days here, and I'm looking forward to coming to Kansas City.
Well, when you get to Kansas City, Rick, you've got to check out the new Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts downtown. It's a spectacular building, and you got to check it out.
Okay, I'm going to put that on my list, Center for the Performing. That's really good. Okay, thanks.
Yeah. Well, you're known for filming in Europe, but are you going to be recording this road trip for later broadcast?
No.
No?
No, I'm going to be blogging seriously on my own Facebook page just for fun. I'm just going to learn a lot about this. And when I have the responsibility to have my little notepad there and take notes and talk, be sure I'm talking to a lot of people, I think I learn a lot more. And then I love the challenge of cobbling all those stray ideas together into articles. So that's kind of what's in my DNA as a travel writer, I think. So I'll be doing a lot of that. But my professional focus is always just going to be Europe. I think Europe is the wading pool for world explorations for a lot of Americans. And it's a big beat, and it's a huge responsibility if people are going to get my guidebooks or take my tours or enjoy my TV shows. And I just really want to do that as best, as well as I can. So I'm going to be careful to stay focused on Europe. But I just think it's pretty pathetic that I've never seen Yellowstone or Yosemite or Mount Rushmore, and I'm going to start changing that now.
Hmm. Well, you can meet Rick Steves at 7 p.m. on March 11th at Unity Temple on the Plaza. Folks want to get out and actually meet Rick while they're here. People are going to be surprised that you haven't seen Yellowstone before, Rick.
Yeah, well, I've hiked across the Swiss Alps, and I've biked across the Pyrenees, and I've done a lot of hanging out on beaches in the south of Portugal and drinking beer with Irish people on the west coast of Ireland, where they look out at the sea and they say, "Ah, the next parish over is Boston," and then that's fun. But it's just you could, the more you know about any region, the more exciting it is to delve deeper into it. And whether it's Central America or Pacific Rim or the United States or Trans-Canada, I'm sure that would be fun, or Europe, there's lots to do. And the main thing is just don't go back to Orlando every vacation for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you're going to be talking a lot about Europe as you travel the country. People will be asking you about it. What does Europe have in store these days, Rick?
What does Europe have in store these days?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, the same thing as it always has, in a sense that it's an evolving continent dealing with the same struggles we're dealing with. They're smart, wealthy, capitalist, Christian, democratic people, just like us in general. And it's fun to think that they are struggling with the same issues. You know, how much taxes do we pay? How do we handle social issues? How do we take care of our environment? Do we take climate change seriously? What about investing in our infrastructure? These are all really important issues for us, and they're important issues for Europeans. And I just think it's, you know, if you'd never leave your own country, you really think that the world is a pyramid with America on top and everybody else trying to figure it out. I felt that until well into my adulthood. And then I traveled and I realized smart people see things differently, and they don't have the American dream. They might have the Norwegian dream or the Moroccan dream or the Sri Lankan dream, and that's a good thing. So I just think that you know, the diversity on this planet is something to celebrate and embrace rather than be threatened by.
Well, your book, Rick, Travel as a Political Act, talks about traveling to get smarter. You're not taking all the fun out of it, are you?
No, I'm not taking all the fun out of it. In fact, I think what carbonates your travel experience is the people you meet. And I'm trying to inspire Americans to meet people that see you not as part of the economy, but as part of the party. You know, you can travel in a way where all you do is meet people that are trying to sell you things.
Mm-hmm.
I was just on a cruise. I was on two cruises in the Mediterranean this last season and had a great time. But if you're not really proactive, your entire experience as a cruise traveler in the Mediterranean will be with people who are focusing on the cruise industry to as a livelihood. And it's not good or bad, but if you are a traveler trying to, you know, have real experiences, you need to bust out of that. And I was impressed by the fact that half an hour after, you know, the gangplank goes down, I could be in a situation where there was no hint of that cruise crowd, the 3,000 tourists on that cruise ship. I could be immersed in Naples or the French Riviera or Civitavecchia in Italy or Istanbul. I mean, and it just, you got to remember, when we're travelers, all the information that comes at us is powered by people's interest in selling you things. And as a consumer, which you are when you're a traveler, you need to be able to sort through that and remember that just because something is not promoted by somebody else's self-interest from a business point of view doesn't mean it shouldn't be considered high on your list of things to see or do. It just doesn't get promoted because nobody's making any money off of you.
Yeah.
Do that. So you gotta really know what your choices are rather than letting them be dictated to you by the cruise director.
Because you point out that travel has shaped your social activism, your advocacy of drug policy reform, and other political work as well. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, for 10 years I've been a board member of NORML, which is the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm certainly not pro-drugs. I just think drug abuse is a serious problem. And I've spent a lot of time in Europe studying this. I just have a fascination with the complexities of drug abuse. And I find that in Europe, they firmly believe that a society has to make a choice, tolerate alternative lifestyles or build more prisons. And then they always tell me that in America we incarcerate 8 times as many people per capita as Europeans do. Either we're inherently more criminal or there's something goofy about our laws. And, you know, our prisons are filled with people in there on drug offenses. And it's been 25 years since they arrested a pot smoker in the Netherlands. It's just kind of goofy to think that you would. And the Dutch people do not consume more pot than we do. A lot of Americans think there's a reservoir of people that would love to ruin their life, smoking marijuana if only it was legal. And the reality is, every country's experience finds that there's no correlation between the strictness of the laws and the consumption. By every country's measure, ours and theirs, Americans smoke double the pot per capita that Europeans do. And the irony or the counterintuitive sort of point is, in America, you can do hard time for it. And in Europe, it's just an alternative to a can of beer. So I'm co-sponsoring an initiative in Washington State where we want to legalize, tax, and regulate marijuana. And I firmly believe use will not go up. We'll take the money and the crime out of it, and we'll be able to treat it as a health challenge and an education challenge rather than a criminal one. And there's a million reasons, you know, that you could well, there's a lot of ways you can learn about this issue, and it's probably not the topic of this conversation right now, but I really enjoy being a little bit courageous and speaking out on this because a lot of people find it tough to talk about this.
Right.
But
right.
I think it's a compassion issue. I think it's a fairness issue, and I think it's a civil liberties issue. I think it's a states' rights issue. I think it's a financial conservative, you know, just stewardship of our resources issue. And most important, I really think that there's a lot of people whose lives are being ruined because of a law that is really based on lies. So we'll see what's happening in the United States. But getting back to our point, because I've hung out with Europeans, I've had a different angle on this, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And and you could also, you know, go down to Central America and see what it's like to be on the receiving end of globalization. You know, globalization is like the weather. It's going to happen. You can't say it's not going to happen. But what is it like to be on the receiving end of it? I don't think most Americans understand that. But
and
when you go to Central America, you do.
You're talking about what specifically there, Rick?
Having to live in a country where there are people who are vast landowners, and then most people don't have any opportunity to own land and be self-sufficient. To live in a country where, you know, the government is owned by a few oligarchic families. To live in a country where whenever there's an election, there'll be a vast amount of money and intimidation coming in from the big landowning factions to keep the friendly-to-business people in power. To understand how it is not allowed for a country to opt out of the free market system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Nicaragua had the full force of the United States against it, not because it was against the United States, but because it wanted to have an economic system that was different from ours. I don't think it was necessarily the right economic system, but I know why the United States was so angry with them is because they were taking their resources and their labor force out of the free market sort of system between nations. And that's very tough for little countries to do. This is challenging and complicated stuff. And I, you know, I got to go down to El Salvador for the for many different occasions. And I was invited to go down for the 25th anniversary of the assassination of Archbishop Oscar Romero.
Mm-hmm.
And during that period, I was slated to have a vacation on the beach in Mazatlan with my family, and I was ready for a little stretch of pristine beach, swept free of local riffraff. I was just going to have a nice leisurely vacation with a plastic band around my wrist so I wouldn't even have to spend any money to get my margaritas. And then I was invited to go to El Salvador instead. And I told my family, I'm going to be no fun on the beach. I got to go to El Salvador. And I was marching on the streets with tens of thousands of Salvadoran peasants whose leader was gunned down. And he said, I'll be gunned down, but my spirit will rise in my people and we will stand strong for our dignity and our rights, you know. And to be on the streets of El Salvador with all those people, and then to come to a monument in the capital, San Salvador, that is a perfect knockoff of our Vietnam Memorial in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
We all know that beautiful Black Granite
right.
Memorial with 50,000 names chipped into it. Well, there was 50,000 names chipped into that one in San Salvador, and every one of those names is the name of a person, a loved one, who died fighting the United States. And, you know, maybe they were communists and we had to kill them, but they are still loved ones, and there's a lot of baggage in that country that still survives from that difficult time. And I just find it really exciting to be able to go there and talk to these people
right.
and gain an empathy for their baggage. We have baggage here in the United States, 9/11 baggage, Cold War baggage, Depression-era baggage, whatever. And other countries have different baggage, and we need to know that if we're going to deal with them smartly.
Travel writer Rick Steves is our guest. If you want to ask a question of Rick about an upcoming trip of yours, 816-235-2888, our email address, updatedate@kcur.org. You know, you share Thomas Jefferson's view, Rick, about how travel makes a person wiser if less happy. What do you mean by that? What did he mean by that?
You know, that's so interesting, and I think about that a lot because life is easier if you can go to Jamaica and hang out on the beach and not wonder what's going on 5 miles inland, you know, on the land that isn't taken over by the tourist resorts. And there is a reality in the world, and to me, I don't want to have ignorance is bliss. I want to really know what motivates people and what are their struggles. And I know that there's 40 countries on this planet where more than half of their national budget goes to pay interest on debts that were run up 20 or 30 years ago by dictators. And now these countries are kept down and in squalor because they are required to pay the interest on those debts to the rich world, including the United States. And I know that debt relief is a serious issue. I know that if climate change is hurting us, it's hurting people in the tropics much more. I know that there's people in Iran that are scared to death about regime change because it'll bring in somebody who will change the morality of their children. You see, I was on the streets of Tehran, and a woman came across the street to me, and she said, "Are you a journalist from America?" And I said, "Yeah, we're making a TV show for public television." And she sort of pointed me on my chest, you know how people do that, and said, "I want you to go home and tell the truth. We're united, we're strong, and we just don't want our little girls to be raised like Britney Spears."
Yeah.
I thought, whoa, you know, here we got something in common. Now, she was a victim of her own country's propaganda, and she was very afraid of American values coming in, taking her daughter and turning her into a boy toy, a drug addict, and a crass materialist. Now, of course, I think she's a little bit over-worried about that, but you can understand, given their heritage and their experience, that this would be a concern of theirs. And I just think it's important for us to have empathy with other people's concerns. How can Iranians, 70 million Iranians, elect a president like they do? You know, because they do vote for him. What's with that? Well, they're motivated by the same thing their counterparts are here. They are small town. I mean, Ahmadinejad's base, you know, his political base is small town, less educated, fundamentalist parents, good people motivated by fear and love. Now, they're not politically savvy. They may be abused by their country's propaganda, but they are motivated by fear and love, and they are fundamentalist about their faith, and they are less educated, rural-type people that are tended to be a little more afraid of the forces from outside their country. We have to respect that and recognize that, and they've got baggage. They were invaded a couple of decades ago by a guy named Saddam Hussein, and they lost several hundred thousand people with one quarter of the population of the United States. That's real baggage. And they believe that the United States funded Saddam Hussein to invade their country. Now, whether we did or not, is who cares? It's just that's what they really think. And we have to realize that's the reality that they see the world from, just like we see the world from a reality that other people might not understand.
Let's go to some phone calls here for Rick Steves. Larry from Kansas City, Missouri, you're on the program. Larry, good morning.
Hi there, Steve. Hi there, Rick. Rick, I just wanted to thank you for your one-hour Iranian special. I really learned a lot on that. For example, you know, Iranians aren't Arabs, they're Farsi.
Yeah.
And that the travel guide that you had there really explained the difference between the Sufi and the Shia really well. And that, hey, when you go into those people's houses and you sit around their dining room tables, they're just like everyone else.
You know, Larry, it was such a thrill to be able to go there as a beginner. And I knew about Iran what most Americans do. I learned from Ted Koppel, you know.
Right.
And that was kind of a media circus back when we were younger.
Mm-hmm.
And today, we need to have a more sophisticated understanding. And I worked very hard, Larry, not to get bogged down on nuclear weapons or stoning adulterers or Israel or terrorism or that kind of stuff. I just wanted to know what's with these people. And I thought a nice primer. And, of course, only in public broadcasting would I have had the opportunity to do that in what I thought was a very thoughtful and even-handed way. And we had, because of public broadcasting, we were able to respect the intelligence of our viewers and assume an attention span and produce something that advertisers would have nothing to do with. No underwriter would get close to a show on Iran like we produced. But public television stations across the country aired this. I've heard many stations had people call them up and say, "We're taking you out of our will because you're becoming a voice for the enemy," or something like this. But public broadcasting is passionate about broadening our perspective and sharing us a better understanding of complicated issues. And if people want to watch that, they can see it on their public television station sooner or later, or they can just Hulu and go to Rick Steves in Iran and you can watch that. But it was a thrill to be able to, for me, to be able to try to straighten out some of these confusing things about a country that we are not supposed to go to. When I got there, I was impressed that the Lonely Planet Guide to Iran sells quite well. And it's just not selling well to Americans, but plenty of Europeans and people from other countries go to Iran on vacation and have a beautiful time.
Well, Rick, it's been a pleasure to have you. Thanks for taking some time with us. And again, our listeners can meet Rick at 7 p.m. on March 11th at Unity Temple on the Plaza. He'll be coming to Kansas City as part of his 20 cities in 20 days road trip across the country. And Rick, it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Steve, thank you. It's a delight to talk to you, and I hope to see a lot of travelers when I'm in Kansas City. Thank you.
All the best, Rick.
Bye now.